Blog Talk Radio.
Steve Austin, astronaut, a man barely alive. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Steve Austin will be that man. Better than he was before. Better, stronger, faster.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
All right. Good evening, folks. No, you're not hallucinating. This is the Comic Shop on a Saturday. We're expecting Mr. John Schnepp. We're going to try it again, folks. Noted director and producer for an upcoming documentary entitled The Death of Superman Lives, The Death of Superman Lives. Listen, as we wait for the gentleman to come through the door for our illustrious program, let's go to a quick nerdcore groove, very brief nerdcore groove. This is the theme from Fat Albert. Let's get to it. This is by Dig. Fat Albert, we'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove. Giving you something a bit different. Again, we're expecting Mr. John Schnepp of Metalocalypse as well as the Venture Brothers. But I could not do the show. We still have the crew to talk about. We still have the crew that's involved in this enterprise. First up, the captain. Captain Kirk, what's up? Let's get to it. course, the indefatigable Daryl.
Ivo! Ivo! Right!
Daryl. I see his number.
I get.
Okay, we're gonna. I had to cut it because we're getting feedback. Something's going on. Are you there, Captain?
I'm here.
Yeah, that was on Daryl's end. I don't know what happened, but we were getting feedback, so hopefully he'll call right back. These things happen. So what's going on, Captain? What's the deal?
Actually, that was a nice sound effect, the way it was put together. You know, those things happen too. Mistakes make world great projects at times. That sounds pretty good right there. That body blow with the echo.
Yeah, it does. All right, let's try this again.
You see what happens when you guys play with my opening? You know, it screws the whole thing up. And my thanks to DC for twisting the knife today with both episodes. Thank you, bastard.
Yeah. Oh, my. Yeah, it was rough. I saw that before the broadcast, actually. Wow. I don't know what to say, Daryl. I really don't. I'm just... Explain to the audience what you're talking about.
Wait, there's a certain fan base that got shafted by DC52. Titans fans and Wally West fans, you know. And after this season, to end Young Justice the way they did, you're bastard, DC. You're bastard.
All right.
Well, actually, Daryl, I think we have our illustrious guest now. I see him through the window. I think he's wearing a Metal Oculus T-shirt or Cartoon Network T-shirt, I believe. Hold on one second, there's my sound is. What's supposed to go that way? Mr. Snap.
I just magically transformed into your studio. What's going
yes.
on?
Welcome to the comic shop.
Hey. Glad to be here.
Terrific. Listen, we're very excited about this project that you've undertaken. It looks like you're going to be successful. You got your money through Kickstarter. Walk us through exactly how this happened. Why this interest in this this iteration of Superman?
Well, I think when it was first announced back in 97, you know, Kevin Smith was writing a script, and then they announced Tim Burton was directing and Nicolas Cage was going to be Superman. I think a lot of people were, you know, struck by, you know, oh, wow, that's a really creative decision. I think I was in the minority when I thought, wow, that's a great decision because, you know, finally they have an actor who is, you know, can play a really extreme character. And I think that's what the Superman franchise needed was a new reboot, kind of a new spin on the whole thing. So. I know a lot of people were not fond of that, and especially in light of Batman and Robin, which had come out just the year before, which I couldn't stand. I hated it. I just saw it as a different take. I mean, I think the internet was one of the reasons that Superman Lives project didn't happen. You know, I've been using Batman, Tim Burton's Batman, as a good counterpoint. If we had the internet, the power that the internet had in 1998, that it had in 1988, which it didn't. I don't think we would have seen Tim Burton's Batman. I think that would have gotten shut down by the producers for fear of, you know, bad box office because they hired a comedian from Beetlejuice to play Batman. And, oh, my God, Tim Burton's ruining the Batman suit by making it all black. And those are obviously giant mistakes on anyone's part. Look at Christopher Nolan basically taking Tim Burton's outfit, you know, for all of his Batman movies. I think, you know, it's like you have to let creatives do their thing. I think that's my kind of main point as to why I got interested in sort of like followed the Superman Lives production design all the way up and through right now currently. I, you know, just checking online, I was always amazed to find these brand new production design drawings or really out there takes on Superman's outfits or which kind of characters are going to portray, like Brainiac inside a giant skull ship. Those things were fascinating to me. as the years went on and the film didn't happen and then other Superman films didn't happen, there was a ton of other superhero films that were happening. Some were great, some were horrible. And the Superman Returns came out, and it was just kind of more of the same of Richard Donner stuff, Lex Luthor buying land, all this kind of stuff that I found, like, that was the Superman of my childhood, and I wanted something different. So I think the whole idea of the stranger and weirder Superman came back to me even stronger, saying, well, that's what I want to – I would like to explore that and see as much of that as possible. So that spawned the documentary.
Well, wouldn't you say that with the advent of the internet, that it's a curse? It's a curse as well as a boon, I guess, because if you think about it, there should have been probably more critique towards Superman Returns than
oh yeah.
No,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Well, I mean, first of all, who would have thought to make that movie, Superman 3. That's essentially what Superman Returns was. When I remember looking at it, it made me feel as if they were trying to make Kevin Spacey into Gene Hackman.
Yes.
Literally.
Yeah. No, I agree. It was a direct. I mean, Bryan Singer said it himself. He was ignoring Superman 3 and 4 and just making a direct sequel to Superman 2. Unfortunately, the Superman Returns script in itself makes zero sense. If you break it down, it's just kind of a hodgepodge of a bunch of scenes. None of it, which is super. I just found it to be I fell asleep twice. I remember my girlfriend having to nod me awake in the movie when I was watching it. It was so boring. So, you know, to me, it's beautifully shot. It's interesting looking. There's some cool effects, but as far as even a featured film, as far as just a movie, it doesn't work. So, I mean, it's not one of those films that I'll watch again. So,
hey, sir, believe me, we have taken apart Superman Returns on this show umpteen times. We keep on trying to find ways because I like Brandon Routh. I like Kate Winslet. I like them. But in this... Really,
you mean Kate Bosworth? She won the Pulitzer Prize when she was 13 in the lowest when she was Lois Lane.
Yeah,
she was 13 years old when she first started working for the Daily Planet. I mean, that movie. It's like you could rip on it in 50 different aspects. Like, just hey, let's take this turn on it, and it falls apart. It just doesn't hold up in any way. So, I mean, Superman lifting a giant mountain, planet-sized mountain full of kryptonite at the end. I think they just threw the playbook away. And at some point, they were like, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? It's like, let's put S's on his boots. I don't know. Who cares? You know?
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons we find your project interesting, because we knew Tim Burton was on the outs with DC and Warner Brothers with the whole Batman thing. Why would then he come back in with this Death of Superman thing? And you know his name carries cachet because he got Kevin Smith right away, and Nicolas Cage said, I'm in it, and I'm really interested to see the whole story, sir.
Well, here, let me clarify something for you. Tim Burton didn't get Kevin Smith. John Peters got Kevin Smith. Smith worked on the screenplay for Superman Lives a year before Tim Burton was ever involved. He just worked specifically with John Peters. And all that information is available on Kevin Smith's YouTube chat, where he hilariously breaks down his meetings with John Peters. So anyone who's, type in Kevin Smith, Superman Lives, and watch those clips on YouTube, they're hilarious. But once Tim Burton actually got hired, Kevin Smith was immediately fired and replaced by the... He was immediately replaced by Wesley Strick. So Kevin Smith and Tim Burton never interacted with Superman. So there's basically two completely different Superman scripts for Superman Lives. There's the Kevin Smith, John Peters one, and there's the Tim Burton, Wesley Strick one. So, which are radically different.
What are your thoughts?
All of the production art, almost all the production art that you've seen online is from the Wesley Strick, Tim Burton script. Some of the production art that's leaked in certain parts is from the Kevin Smith version, which is like the giant spider you'll see that recently leaked, which is like Superman fighting a big spider. So,
well, we're talking about now going on, what, 14, 15 years ago? So
yeah.
One would think that how would the effects have been? I guess it would have been somewhat decent, but, you know, now the effects are almost, you know, where they need to be for these things to look more actualized. Do you think that might have been a problem as well?
No, not at all. I mean, remember, Phantom Menace came out in 1999. This was a movie that was
right,
in 1998.
Could we forget about that?
No,
sorry. Keep on going,
no, I'm just
sir.
Saying, it's like, I'm a big special effects head, so it's like, it's not like we were living in the Stone Age in 1998. It's like, we already had, like, everyone was on a computer. Everything was being done with computer graphics. We had incredible compositing. Matrix came out in 1999. So it's like, the effects would have been incredible, and that's one of the things Tim Burton says. Like, we wouldn't have had a guy on wires. We would have been able to do incredible special effects of him, you know, flying around, fighting, doing all really super things. So, anyway, that's I think the effects would have been fantastic. It would have been like a cosmic science fiction freakout. That's what the Superman movie that Tim Burton was going to make would have been. You had an alien from outer space, Brainiac, fighting an alien who's landed on Earth, Superman. You had all these battles, all this crazy, really cool, crazy storylines. I mean, it definitely had a sense of humor. A lot of people who have read the Wesley Strick script kind of complain about the weird, goofy sensibility. But in the same sense, it's like, if you look at all of Tim Burton's films, they all have a little bit of a sense of humor to them and a sarcastic edge running through them. And I think, you know, once it goes through, like, your first and second and third draft, and then you're in production, they're adding lines, changing lines, actors are giving their own takes on it, then it's edited, and reshoots are done. You know, I mean, it's a whole process, any kind of making films, media, television. So, you know, you can never judge a first draft of a script as, like, oh, my God, it would have been horrible. It's like, well, it's like a first draft. That's why it's called a first draft, you know. So,
Well, now that your Kickstarter campaign has gained some notoriety,
right.
How successful do you think you'll be in getting some of the players that were involved in that project to appear in your documentary?
Well, I certainly hope I can get everybody I want. So, I mean, I'm not actually going to even start shooting this until the end of April. Right now it's all in pre-production, just writing out what I want to do and getting in contact with the people I need to get in contact with. So I feel really positive about it, you know. It's like, I don't see why no one would want to be in the Ultimate Superman Lives documentary who was involved in it. So I don't think there's going to be a second Superman Lives documentary. So
well,
it would be nice,
well,
you know, to get everyone involved in it.
Well, how do you think this is one of the few projects that got as far as it did, where it almost became a reality? As you mentioned, there were other takes that actually would be of interest to discuss. I mean, Batman versus Superman, Superman Flyby. I mean, there's a number of Superman Reborn. There's a number of these projects that went a certain way, and then they just fell on the side.
Well, here's the thing about production on any property or entity. The public is only going to see like 1/100th of the amount of work that goes into any production that is eventually canceled. Because, I mean, unless it just got to just the script phase, but a lot of productions get to a pre-visualization phase. I mean, Watchmen, the earlier Watchmen that had the director of The Bourne Identity, Greengrass. And there's a ton of artwork on that, you know, where it was like all current and like involved terrorism. And there's a ton of designs and sketches and costume read, you know. There's like work on that just ends up getting shelved and put in a, you know, a little folder and, you know, either digitized or tossed or whatever. It's just things canceled. So it happens all the time. So, I mean, with certain, like, Superman Flyby, I've seen in full animatics that McGee had made of, you know, scenes from Superman Flyby where he's fighting Tizor in the middle of Metropolis and they're both, like, blasting each other with lasers out of their eyes. And I mean, it would have been an incredible action-packed movie. Once again, that's a film that, unfortunately, due to the Internet, was shut down because people complained about it before it was actually made. They were like, oh, no, that's not fair. Krypton is supposed to explode. Stay with the mythos of Superman. I think people like who have that kind of attitude, I think it's sad to me. It's like, look, you know what I'm saying? It's like we already got several Superman movies where we had the actual origin done exactly like the comic books from the 30s, we live in 2013. Let's try something new. Let's try a couple of different reboots. It doesn't matter. You can always make the same old thing again. I mean, I'm all for trying some new things. That's what I'm all about. So that's like when you get a movie like here's what I'll say. I'll say this for the internet and Fantastic Four 2, Rise of the Silver Surfer, Galactus as a cloud. That's a mistake. That's a straight up mistake. But not only is that a horrible film in its own right, but it's also just no one got the Fantastic Four who was working on that movie. They were making it a goofy comedy. They had ruined Dr. Doom in the first movie, giving him some kind of cyber electric energy stuff. They just didn't get the idea of why people even like the Fantastic Four. And if you go against that entire thing, like the core idea of what it's about, you're going to fail. So I don't think that core idea was wrong in what Tim Burton was trying to do. His whole thing was like he saw it as like there's an alien on our planet who's like trying to fit in. He has all these powers, so he's helping humanity. I think it was a great way of showing like you know this superhero god is like a mirror reflection of all of our things that we want to be, that we look up and we claim to be as human beings, all of our morals and ethics. That's what this super alien really is. He's saying, look, I'll do what you say you guys want to be, and then yet we as humans are like killing each other and fighting and, you know, not just robbing banks, but like murdering each other in other countries. And, you know, so I think it's a really it's a good mirror that Superman plays. So I think that's what, you know, not in such a dark and deep way would Tim Burton's mirror be, but, you know, I think Christopher Nolan's Man of Steel is going to have that similar mirror. So we'll see. I think that's going to be a really cool reboot of Superman.
Captain, I'm pretty sure you have a question for Mr. Schnapp.
Okay, do you feel at times, you know, sometimes we say on this show here that art has to dictate the money instead of the money dictating the art. Do you feel that at times, you know, Hollywood shuts down these products because they look for a cookie-cutter formula and their money cannot necessarily dictate the art at the given time because it doesn't fit into that formula?
Yes, without a doubt. I mean, make no mistake, not just Hollywood, but all forms of media are basically about making money. They're, you know, anything you watch on television has an ad in between the parts that you're watching on television. It's all about money, and it's all about – that's what it is. So when somebody goes into the idea of I'm going to make a 90-minute film because I want to tell a story and I want to share it with this audience, unless they raise the money themselves, by themselves, or independently wealthy, they need to have some kind of a financial institution come in to give them the money to make that film, and that film has to then turn a profit, and that's just kind of how it is. So when you're dealing with multiplexes and just like the machine that started in the 70s and kind of wiped out what was independent film back then. It was just basically what you would just call a movie. You know, hey, let's go see this movie. It's starring, you know, Jack Nicholson and his other prisoner. It's about these dudes hanging out in Brooklyn. You don't really see those kinds of movies anymore. Now it's like in a world transformed by like metal monsters. You know, it's like everything has to be $100 million and 75 different giant superstars are in it. And it's just like, it's, you know, it's playing in 3,000 theaters, so it's just kind of screwed up the whole idea of going to some movies anyway. But that's all been transferred into television, and that's what now we have Netflix streaming, and we have Hulu, and we have Amazon Prime. We have access to all these movies. Like Middle America can now turn on a foreign film, and you could be watching The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the Swedish version. You would not be able. No one in Middle America would even know that ever existed if we didn't have the power of Netflix and the streaming. I think these products have transformed a lot of people's lives and also kind of enhanced their lives to a certain degree. It's made them like more of a meta critic than they even know about. So they could talk about different filmmakers from different countries with authority now, as opposed to I never heard of that. That never got to my blockbuster. You know what I'm saying?
That's what I meant by, in a way, maybe I didn't clarify, that's what I meant that the internet, in a way, is a double-edged sword. Because now, post this time you're talking about, post Superman Lives, it seems
right.
Like because the internet is so intimately, the fanboy has so much power now, the fanboy and fangirl, I should say, they have they have more of an ability to kind of dictate how this should really be. And it can be problematic, but it can also be interesting. The fact that Man of Steel undoubtedly has to be pretty close to what we want to see, that has a lot to do with the internet. They know that people are going to talk crap if this thing doesn't come out the way that they want it. And it seems
right.
it seems like now, although we can complain about the advertisers and the corporate element involved in it, you also have to admit that the reason why you can have a Christian Bale as Batman, I think a lot had to do with, well, people started saying, hey, listen, this is the guy. This is the guy.
Right.
So it just seems like there's less room for mistakes with these superhero movies when the internet and the fanboys and the fan public, they're so much into letting these people know directly, hey, this is the way we want it.
Right.
So it just seems like we're go ahead.
But at the same time, there is no excuse for anybody on the internet to say, I hate it. I don't like what it is. I don't. But have you seen it? No, I haven't. I just hate it. There's no excuse for that now. Even when I rail upon something on this show, all right, I make sure to see a bit of it first before I rail on it. I may say in the beginning, oh, God, this is so going to suck. Hi, new Teen Titans. Yeah, I'm looking at you. But I'm going to make sure to see a couple of episodes first and then say, you know what? My fact was proven, you know, or my fact was disproved. There's too many people on the net now that will give out an opinion, but when they're proven wrong, oh, I didn't say that. That was somebody else. Here on the comic shop, we put our names behind it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's like Slizo, cat number 73, says, I mean, so this, you could just talk anonymously and troll around and just complain about stuff and never have to back it up because your name's not on there. It's just some fake name. So, you know, that's the power of the internet. You can complain all you want and then go and be yourself because you're like a separate identity online. So that's your superhero, you know. That's like during the day, I'm Bob Skibitz. I work at, you know, Ralph's. At night, I'm cat number 333, and I, you know, complain about everything, you know.
John, can we push on hold for just one moment? We're going to go to a quick musical break. When we get back, just a few more questions. I don't want to take up too much of your time. But sure. I do want to ask you a question. Think about this as we play this quick cut. What about seeing a Superman Lives with the original cast in animated form? And Tim Burton could do it because he's done it before successfully.
Sure.
Think about that as we go to a quick musical break. More with Mr. Schnepp. And Superman Lives, of course. This is Saturday Morning Cartoon's Greatest Hits by Sublime, Hong Kong Fooey Theme. We'll be back in a few moments. Be right back.
Who is this superhero? Sarge?
No!
Rosemary, the telephone operator?
No, I'm Ann.
Henry, the mild-mannered janitor?
Hong Kong Fooey, number one super guy. Hong Kong Fooey, quicker than a human eye. Oh, he's got style, a groovy smile, a body that just won't stop. When the going gets rough, he's super tough.
Hong Kong Fooey, number one super guy. Hong Kong Fooey, oh,
Okay, we're back. Again, that was Sublime with the Hong Kong Phooey theme, and I think that was even on the drawing board for coming back as Eddie Murphy reimagined. I saw something on the internet. They were looking for that.
Yeah, that TV thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how that would have gone down either. I think he was looking for, as he plays Donkey, maybe he was looking for another animated pet to do. And
sure,
I have fond of
sure.
you know, but Scatman Crothers all the way for me. The late Scatman Crothers. Anyway, more with Mr. John Schnepp from the Superman Lives, the Death of Superman Lives documentary. I'm excited about this thing. Can't wait to pick it up.
Yeah, so you mentioned Superman Lives Animated. I think that's a great opportunity. It's a super opportunity for Warner Brothers to do something with that property. I'm going to be animating a few segments from Kevin Smith's script and Wesley Strick's script as examples in this documentary. Some of them will be animatics or storyboards, and some will actually be full-blown animation. So it'll be kind of fun. I mean, obviously, I'm not Tim Burton, so I'm going to try to emulate a few sequences that would be Tim Burton-esque. But, I think... that's a great opportunity to do that script and to do it, I don't know if they'd get Tim Burton to direct it, but it would be great to just, try adapting some of these other scripts or stories. You know, I mean, I look at it like Whatever Happens to the Man of Tomorrow, that's a Superman story that should be turned into a DC, movie. You know, the Alan Moore, the last Superman story. So it's there's a lot of comic books that, but DC has done a great job of translating, like the Dark Knight two-part series that just came out recently. I thought it was fantastic.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was a really well-done animated translation from an amazing comic book. So, once again, I think with the Superman Lives, just recently, just this past week, I got a folder with about 12 production paintings from Superman Lives that I had never seen.
Wow.
So as doing this documentary, a lot of people have come out of the woodwork and sent me images and sent me, hey, I'm an artist who did this, or I'm a, production designer who did that, and here's the stuff I did for it. So it's been really fascinating. And of course, all these things all have to get done the right way, image clearance and all this other kind of stuff. So, it's going to take a little bit of time to get this doc done, but I'm excited about doing it. So it's like archaeology.
One thing that I thought was interesting, we talk about this all the time on the show, is that Hollywood now, it was a time when Hollywood was so bereft of new ideas, and to a certain degree, they're still bereft of new ideas. But I always said, why don't they actually walk in a comic shop where the story's already storyboarded, everything is ready to actually visualize it, is ready to go. And now that seems to be happening. But if they're going to go into a comic shop, one thing that they should realize, that comic books are all about alternative universes, different storylines. It's all about the room for exploration. What if comics, all those things. Do you think that we will ever see that? I mean, they're tapping into the comic book world. That's part of the comic book world, that you have these alternate takes of things. One thing I was thinking about, this is in my own idea, we've seen Batman enough. They're going to treat Batman like the James Bond series. And Batman is not James Bond. So I'm thinking, why wouldn't they do a Batman Beyond live action? Have Clint Eastwood as the elderly Batman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just in my head. That's a winner, I think. But I mean, keep on doing the same themes.
Well, that's the whole thing, though. I mean, I think the interesting thing about some of these characters, like Batman and Superman, are now like 70 plus years old as far as existing. They're characters that need to be rebooted with the times; otherwise, they just become archaic. I think that's what Marvel and DC constantly keep doing with their 52 or their any of their these reboots, starting with Crisis. It was like, look, we've got like 58 Earths and 27 Supermans, and we can't be having all this stuff, so we need to condense it and make it so that people who are just reading comics now understand what's going on. So, you can't have a market filled with like people in their 50s buying comic books. It's just not, because then you're just not selling them. There's only a very small group of people. So, you constantly have to get a new, fresh group of people to be interested in buying comics. And we live in a world now where
look at all the comic shops that have been closing every year. I mean, it went from like 5 years ago, 9,000 comic shops to 2,000 comic shops now. That's got to tell you something. They're going away, you know. Digital is taking over, and the comics being printed on paper is just really only a few years away from it stopping being existing, because there aren't going to be any bookstores to sell them. You know what I'm saying?
Trust me, our favorite comic shop owner, she doesn't even want me to mention digital comics in the shop.
Right.
I can't even mention it. Seriously, don't mention it. One more question. I know you're busy.
Yeah.
Daryl, I know you have a question.
Oh, no. Most of my stuff has been answered already. I just can't wait. Hearing him just say, you know what, we're going to try to animate some of this with, hopefully, from Tim Burton to Kevin Smith. Yo, the geek in me is jumping up and down for joy, because that'd be interesting to see. But I'm praying to God, please don't make it Superman Doomsday.
You know what? I'm just as big of a nerd as you guys. So honestly, for me, it is like a fan kind of thing. When like a friend of mine was in South by Southwest, and he was like, "Yo, this dude found out about you doing the Superman thing. His friend had these drawings, and you know, so I got this binder with all these Superman list drawings and just stuff like that." Where it's like, "Oh my God!" So sort of like it's fun for me to discover this stuff and put it all together. But for me, the documentary is really like it's like, look, Superman's a great character, but superheroes are a great thing. It's like it starts out with Siegel and Schuster coming up. That's how I start the documentary, with like a reenactment of them coming up with Superman, and then we do the credits thing, and then kind of rock through like the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, right up to the 90s, like the entire history of not just Superman but superheroes for like the first 10 minutes, because I want people who don't understand this shit to kind of understand it from a deep nerd level as to why we're even into this kind of thing. So I think it's really important.
Why we get anal about it? Yeah.
It's important for people to know the history, and if people don't understand history of comics, they don't know shit. You know, that's how I look at it. So,
what's the expected date on this? I mean, you're starting up. When do you think you'll be able to have this completed and ready to go?
I'm really seriously gunning for like New York Comic Con, and then a big LA convention here, either Kamikaze or something. Like probably like October, November is when I'll be premiering it at different comic book conventions. So. That's kind of my end result, is like I'd like to have it done and in people's hands in October, November. So.
Okay, well, we'll definitely be there at the New York convention. You have other projects. Oh, before I let you go, what are the other projects that I think you've actually gone through? Grimm, I think, through Kickstarter?
Yeah.
You have other projects going through.
Yeah, last year I teamed up with this comic company called Zenoscope, and they're like kind of like the cheesecake pinup Grimm Fairy Tales fantasy girl thing. So
right.
It was fun. I used that company's comic books to turn it into an anthology that's sort of like Tales from the Crypt, which is what their Grimm Fairy Tales are. It's just got really hot chicks in it. So it's sort of like I looked at that as like if I was going to animate it, I'm going to make this like heavy metal the movie, like 1980.
Oh,
so,
wow. That was
yeah,
taking
so
me back
like,
now.
yeah, but I just want to get a whole bunch of different artists that I know, like comic book artists, like Eric Powell and other kinds of artists like Alex Pardee. You know, I got Bill Sienkiewicz, one of the masters, a whole bunch of different guys to design the characters, and then I put them all together and then kind of wrote this newer, like, anthology-style 20-minute pilot, and that's what we raised the money for. So we got $188,000 to do it. You know, Kickstarter takes all their money, and then – you know, you got to make the incentive. So it's like sum total, the whole budget was like about 140. You know, but we were able to put it all on screen. So I'm really proud of it, and that should be out in the next 2 months. I mean, it's done. I just finished the behind the scenes with my editor friend. So all that stuff is done, and we're going to be making the Blu-ray this coming month. So, you know, it's like that's just the process of when you get the money through something like Kickstarter, you can just make it. You just hit the ball running, you know, start going, make it, you know, hit the ground running is what I was trying to say. So
yeah, as much as we rip the internet, you know what, it's only through the internet where we get stuff like Kickstarter, where fans can say, you know what, that project looks good, I'll be willing to put some bucks behind it, I want this to be up there. So as much as I rip on it, I gotta give it kudos here, you know.
Same here, man. I love Kickstarter. I love the freedom and the ability to be able to talk directly to people who are into the things that I want to make. I don't have any middlemen. I don't have to appease anybody. I don't have to do any kind of branding. I don't have to worry about anything other than like, hey, here's this idea. Who's into it? help me make this. And in exchange, you can have this some cool stuff that I'm going to make. So believe me, I'm going to do a lot more projects through Kickstarter. I've already got two that – one I was going to do before the Superman thing. So I even have an animated sizzle reel of this cartoon I want to make, but I had to put it on the back burner because the whole Superman documentary kind of took over my mind. And I was like, man, this would just be fun to make a documentary. And not that animation or doing – live-action television shows isn't fun. It's just a different kind of work, and you put your mind on a different kind of headset. So being a documentarian and just finding out information and interviewing people about a film that didn't ever happen, to me, just, like, clicked with me. I was like, this is going to be fun to make. So I'm really happy that everybody chipped in, and I'm going to be able to make it to the standards that I wanted to make it to. I didn't just want to, like, walk around with a video camera and talk to people. I was like, I want to have really cool title sequences. I want to have really cool animated bits. I want to have, you know, it's got to have reenactments and flourishes. So it's like, and I'm making it like a narrative film. So you'll see when it's done. It's going to be a trip. So,
well, listen, we'd like to have you back when your project's in with the Blu-ray and everything. We definitely want to keep in touch with you. And
yeah,
behind
sure.
the scenes, I'll try to also give you. You were on Geek Time, shouting out Geek Time on SiriusXM. I'll try to give
right
you
on.
your portion. I can send you an MP3 of that.
Oh,
so,
that'd be awesome. I appreciate that.
So I'll definitely send it to you in about a day or so. John,
great.
As always, we appreciate your support, and we'll definitely support you with your documentary. Can't wait to see it.
Right on.
We'll probably see you at Comic-Con.
Yeah, for sure, man. I'll be at WonderCon. I don't know if you guys are going to come out to California. You know, I always hit all the major conventions because I'm a big nerd. I've been going to them for 15 years, you know, so it's like,
listen, you've come to the right place. We'll see you. Trust me.
All right, you guys take care.
You too. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay, folks. John Schnepp, Cartoon Network, Metalocalypse. That's a mouthful. And now this documentary, The Death of Superman Lives. I'm excited about it, and he's definitely a true geek/nerd, you can tell his excitement about this thing. So I'm eager to check out this documentary when it's done. And we'll probably meet him at the convention, especially the one in New York coming up in October. So if we can get tickets, I think. Darryl, did you hear about how quickly the Comic-Con in San Diego sold out?
Oh, yeah, I heard. And I'm like, okay, who bought up all these tickets? Wow. Something about it just seems fishy to me. Something really seems fishy to me that a Comic Con as large as San Diego sold all of its tickets out. Really? I'm sensing brokerage here.
You might be onto something, but really, but listen, man, this thing gets more and more popular. It keeps on reaching the new heights in popularity year by year, though.
Power.
You know, years ago, we heard about the San Diego thing, but it was always this separate thing that the nerds went to. Now it is a part of the America's pop cultural experience. I mean, CNN has. You have to think about this, Darryl. CNN has a special show geared for Comic-Con coverage. CNN, and even when we talked about SiriusXM has a weekend channel of all day long footage of Comic-Con. You never saw that before. It just gets more and more big. Anyway, listen, we have more show. We got about 15 minutes remaining, so I still want to get into some more topics while we still are able to. Folks, you're listening to the Saturday Grindhouse edition of the Comic Shop / Afno Radio. You know, we spoke to John about his project, Superman Lives. Pardon me, The Death of Superman Lives. But there's another project. I meant to even mention this to him. Veronica Mars, the movie. What are your thoughts about that? You know, it was a UPN show. Now we seem to be going to Kickstarter to get things that we want to see. What are your thoughts?
Like I said, I can't fight it. I found out from True Adam Warrock's Facebook page. He put up a post because he was by South by Southwest. And as soon as he saw it, the exact thing I put in the blog with him speaking in all caps, that was exactly what he put in. And I said it. Hey, I've heard from Veronica Mars fans are some of the most diehard fans in television. All right? We thought the Chuck people were, you know,
hard-headed and passionate about that thing. Au contraire, the Veronica Mars fans were doing it long before Chuck ever came to the screen. And I went, hey, simply put, yo, Veronica Mars fans, you got what you've been wishing for all this time. Here it is, somebody with a Kickstarter for a Veronica Mars movie. Hey, show you weren't fake behind it. Make it happen. And it's, like I said, true, the beauty of a thing like Kickstarter, that these things are possible. So, you know, I can't hate on it.
Uh-oh. I only hate the internet so much because... Hello?
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, what I was saying is the internet is truly a double-edged sword because now these projects that you really want to see, that someone may say, it's never going to happen. Well, you know what? Screw that. We're going to make it happen. Because when you look at what's happening with this Veronica Mars thing, it's definitely going to happen because we're seeing that through Kickstarter, they've already accumulated over $3.5 million for this thing. So something's going to happen.
$3.5 million. Just let that sink in a second for a television show that you can see free of charge on TV that they canceled. Okay.
Well, listen, we know that the star, Kristen Bell, she is on House of Lies now with Don Cheadle. But she's still rather young-looking. I'm assuming, you know, they could figure out some way to get it's not going to work unless she's involved in it, I would think, in some way. But this is according to Wikipedia. It says, following the cancellation of the series, talking about Rob Thomas, that's the writer, not the singer, Thomas wrote a feature film script continuing the series. Warner Brothers opted not to fund the project at the time. Now, this is what I'm talking about. Constant corporate BS, Daryl. Warner Brothers opted not to fund the project at the time. They didn't get it. Now it says, March 2013, Bell and Thomas launched a fundraising campaign. Wait a minute. So Kristen Bell's involved with this thing. It says, Bell and Thomas launched a fundraising campaign to produce the film through Kickstarter and attained the $2 million goal in less than 10 hours. 10 hours! Production is scheduled to begin during summer 2013 with a projected release date of early 2014 and has accumulated over $3.5 million via Kickstarter. It's a wrap.
Like I said, Jericho fans, Chuck fans, Battlestar fans, we all think we're passionate and dedicated. Check out the Veronica Mars fans. Give them the amount of money raised again. Give them that.
You know
in
what?
A short time.
You know what? You know what? My Starship crew, I got an idea.
Oh, here we go.
You know what I want? You know what I want? I want to see that robot scene. The robot. I'm into this thing. I want to see completion. I want to see my memory. You know what I want, Daryl. The Terminator, the Terminator, Sarah Connor, Terminator thing. Hey, why not?
He wants it completed. He wants Sarah Connor's Chronicles to be completed, folks. Kickstarter has awakened the beast. Cap, get out the volume. We're going to need it for him.
Listen, just when robot and human love was about to be consummated.
Oh, here we go.
And he did it again on on Green Lantern this morning. Anytime there's any inkling, this is racism. Anytime there's inkling of hot robot sex with humans, they pull
God.
The cord.
Spoilers, folks. Spoilers, just in case you haven't seen Green Lantern or Young Justice. Spoilers are about to happen. Go ahead, keep on going.
Well, I'm just saying, there's a theme. There's a theme.
Artificial life form ism.
Yes. just as that hot female robot was about to make love to John Connor, they pull the plug.
Oh, dear
God. The same thing with Aya and Razor, the plug was pulled, and I want to see it. So I think
I'm pretty sure someone can put together a campaign for a season three or a film, even I guess a film of that of Sarah Connor. That's what I want.
So stretching this out, you're essentially saying that my hope for Cyborg finally getting with Sarah Charles is null and void because human robot slash cyborg slash metallic person creature interrelations will never happen. That's what you're saying.
Yes, it's a conspiracy.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay.
Hot metallic love is not what they want to see. Racism. Racism. All right.
As we go off the rails.
All right. I'm half joking. Anyway, Kick-Ass 2 trailer, Daryl. Did you see it?
Yes. And
what are your thoughts?
It's okay.
Oh, my God.
Hold on. You know I'm not the biggest fan of the franchise.
Your opinion is wrong, sir. Your opinion is wrong. Continue.
Okay. Right. I'm just saying, I'm not the biggest fan of the franchise. You guys know my feelings about Mark Millar and his associate properties already. That being said, Kick-Ass 1 was a pretty good movie. All right? And hopefully, number 2, it looks to be highly energetic and everything like that. I'm going to go see it. But again, the trailer looks good. Now prove it. Prove it. And I love Jim Carrey. You know, prove it. Prove it. Make it come together for me.
As long as they have Hit Girl, they'll be fine. She makes the whole thing very seductive.
Well, they should make it into Hit Woman because you can see that she... this is the problem with having child stars. They grow up. You know, when looking at her, she's like a grown woman now.
Yeah.
I mean, physically. I think she's still underage, so I got to be careful what I say. But still...
16. Yeah,
she's, but she looks, I can't say until she's 18. But she looks like an adult. I'm going to leave it at that.
Do we have to install an Olsen twins-type counter here for you? Is this where this show is going?
Yes. No, but the Olsen twins clock, as we can see, was faulty. They didn't end up being hot. This, I can tell. That her time is going to be correct. Not so much for Olsen twins. Although the Olsen twins have correct money. Their money is beautiful, but not them. I'm just saying. Anyway, I say where I have a thumbs up, you have a kind of a half thumb.
The trailer is okay. I'm not going gaga.
I am. I liked it. A beefed up Jim Carrey, for Christ's sake. Jim Carrey actually looked like the character. Everyone looks the way they're supposed to look. And the fighting scenes seem pretty cool. I'm on that. All right. Going further, because we only have a few more moments, what the F comics? What is that, Daryl? DC? Is this DC trying to be edgy?
Yes, and failing miserably. What the F comic? It was going to be an event. What the F? You know, we're going through the whole line. What the F? Okay. I don't know how many shots of Jack and Jägermeister these guys had when they came up with this idea. I know you want to draw attention to yourselves. Case in point, the death of Robin. I know you want to draw attention to yourself. Case in point, what they did to Captain Carrot. But... what the F? You don't think in the Bible-thumping Belt of America and stuff like that, that whole phrasing there would get you in just a little bit of trouble? You don't think that would just turn off a lot of parents who are introducing books to their kids? You didn't think that would happen, DC? This is why whenever you have an idea, give it a day or two to think about the ramifications of producing said idea. Back to you.
Go into a little bit more. What is exactly the premise? I mean, are we dealing with the regular DC properties, or is it totally a different thing? I mean, what is What the F Comics? We know what the acronym stands for, but...
Essentially, it was going to be where they would produce shock and surprises throughout the line with the 52 comics, with shocks and surprises in each one. Hence the what the F, you know, whether it be a shocking character return, a shocking plot point, a shocking, you know, where it was intended to build up publicity and excitement. Well, they got the publicity part right. Excitement, not so much.
So you think that it's falling short, that it's just not all that it's cracked up to be?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. That, listen, anytime we're doing grabs to get public's eyes on your product, you may get public's eyes on your product, but you also will get their criticism too. And this one definitely got more criticism than favoritism.
Well, is this supposed to be, I guess, analogous to Marvel's, what's Marvel's dark line? You know, it's adult line.
What, Marvel Knights?
Yeah, Marvel Knights. Is it supposed to be sort of like Marvel Knights?
But that's just it. DC had their own line, Vertigo, that Marvel's
right.
been trying to replicate for years. They didn't need to do anything. They did not need to do this. All right? They had Elseworlds. They've had so much that Marvel hasn't touched yet that they've dismantled to do something as schlocky as this.
What a choice of words. Oh, man.
All right.
But Cap, you can't disagree. The Elseworlds, Marvel's tried it with What Ifs and stuff. They haven't touched the Elseworlds. Vertigo, hey, Marvel tried to replicate that with Knights, and they couldn't hold it together outside of the Punisher. You know? DC, come on, man. Stop ruining your own ideas. Go with Vertigo. You're good.
All right, listen. Obviously, I see Mr. Passion has come out towards the tail end of the show. Daryl, we're going to pick this up and table it up until next week. Again, I want to appreciate Mr. John Schnepp for stopping by. Definitely looking forward to his Death of Superman Lives documentary. And we will do this again next week. As always,
enjoy, folks,
it's been a pleasure. Next, we're going next door, folks.
Sponsor the beast. I think not. Anybody know who Willie Lynch was? Anybody? Raise your hand. No one? He was a vicious slave owner in the West Indies. The slave masters in the colony of Virginia were having trouble controlling their slaves, so they sent for Mr. Lynch to teach them his methods. The word lynching came from his last name. His methods were very simple, but they were diabolical. Keep the slave physically strong, but psychologically weak and dependent on the slave master. Keep the body, take the mind. I and every other professor on this campus are here to help you to find, take back, and keep your righteous mind. Because obviously you have lost it.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to enter this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funk and lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos, mortals label me as a lock.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bert, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Folks, you're not hallucinating. This is Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, the Saturday Grindhouse Edition, Part 2. Welcome. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Well, you know what we do. We do the damn thing. We talk about the goings-on that need to be talked about. So before we get into the discourse, let's get into some groove. This is Didn't See It. A little taste of black rock. Didn't See It by Sabata. We'll be right back. And again, let's groove. Afternoon Radio featuring Captain Kirk. And speaking of the captain, Captain, you need it on the bridge. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Just as a quick suggestion, Sir Afro Nerd, can we start with the positive blue area and then progress to the come on, are they really doing that? Good times. And then move on to the gloomy? Just a suggestion.
Oh, sure. Yeah, let's do a topsy-turvy deal.
Yes.
I agree with you on that. I mean, sometimes, unfortunately, we get stuck in analyzing and waxing about the stuff that it's just nonsense and incredibly horrific. So let's turn things around, as so aptly put by the captain. First up, let's talk about this 12-year-old girl, young woman, I should say, young lady, who is a chef, and I think a highly skilled one. Haley Thomas, I believe, was on NBC recently, some NBC program. And it seems that her credentials are somewhat reputable. again, Haley Thomas, 12 years old, from Tucson, Arizona. She's on the Today program. Let me get it right here. Last Tuesday. And she made some kind of black bean concoction, black bean quinoa salad with garlic shrimp and avocado. And this was something she recently cooked for the First Lady as part of her kids' state dinner. Actually, the first, this is from Michelle Obama, the first kids' state dinner. I think that's pretty interesting within itself, that there's such a thing as a kids' state dinner. So anyway, they're saying that this young lady, her culinary skills are not to be clowned. She's real. She said she's hobnobbed with Alice Waters and Bill Clinton. And it says that she's been cooking since she was 5 with her mother, and now she has some skills. So I think that's pretty cool that you have a young lady who's already making connections with the creme de la creme. And she probably can make some creme de la creme, by the way. Anyway, she is hobnobbing with these folks. And I would hope that she might look at this as a real vocation. You know, I think she signed on with some kind of advisory board, the Alliance for a Healthier Generation, the Alliance for a Healthier Generation. And it's all about combating childhood obesity. So you have a young lady at 12 on the come up who has cooked for the First Lady. You could put that on a resume, Captain, and, you know, again, her name is Haley. It's not Kanisha. So she's on – I'm just saying. She's a woman of color, a young lady of color. Redact that. Young lady of color who has already cooked for the creme de la creme at 12 years of age, who has a pronounceable name, and I would not be shocked in 10 years – she might have her own restaurant doing the damn thing. So she is to be applauded. Haley Thomas from Tucson. Your thoughts, Captain?
Well, I thought it was totally excellent. As they would say down south, the girl can burn. She definitely has some skills. And there was a little video that I was looking at the food that she was making. It actually looks pretty good based on the video. We know also through these things, they could hook it up and spray it and make it look a certain way. But it actually looks like she really does know what she was doing. It doesn't look like this is just a propaganda situation. She looks like she truly has skills. So she's definitely to be applauded. Back over to you, Sir Applebird.
Yeah, it's something that I had advertised from the last show, I think. Again, folks, our apologies for Wednesday. Wednesday we had to do some things. We're working on some projects behind the scenes that will definitely be, the operative word, tangentially, our favorite word, tangentially connected to AfroNerd. There's some things we're doing that this is at the behest of AfroBrit, shouting out AfroBrit, and I will contact her behind the scenes as well for perhaps a London branch of what we're proposing. I kid you not. But there's something we're doing that is definitely put out, we're going to put it out there to combat the minstrelsy. We talk about this a lot. I think, you know, listen, the show, for what it is, for what it's worth, we do what we can. But there's going to have to be some imprints put out there, folks. I'm speaking in somewhat vague terms, but you'll get it once it's completed. But there has to be imprints, and the captain is involved, imprints to combat the minstrelsy. For if there's a flash, there's a reverse flash. I'm geeking out now. If there's a Superman, there's a Bizarro. So just think about it. If there is something out there or some things out there, ladies and gentlemen, that are of minstrel in nature, there has to be, logically, there has to be something to counter that. So we intend to do this on the internet tip, and we're working behind the scenes. So there's going to be some shows here and there that will have to be preempted in order for us to expand what we're doing. So we hope to have you involved in this journey with these other projects that I think you will enjoy, that are meant to expand what we talk about here. We talk about Black Rock. We talk about politics from a different perspective, different guests. I just received Maceo Parker's book in the mail, 98% Funk is the new book, by the way, 98% Funk. We're looking at Mr. Parker to come through tentatively for March 27th. So look out for that. Again, the iconic saxophonist Maceo Parker. Maceo! James Brown's Maceo, George Clinton's Maceo, and, of course, His Royal Badness, Prince's Maceo, should be making an appearance at Afternoon Studio. So stay tuned. There's things coming up on the horizon, folks. We want you to stick around. It's going to be a bumpy ride, but a definitely an educational one. Anyway, more on the Blue Area tip. For those who are new to Afternerd, when we talk about Blue Area, say, what the hell is Blue Area? Blue Area is definitely a Marvel comic book term, Marvel comic book lore, where the where these characters that we talk about can breathe free air, where all these fantastic characters can breathe free air on the moon specifically, the Blue Area, the moon. So where we are able to breathe fresh air, we're not always talking about minstrelsy and coonery and abject nonsense. We have to make room for where we can breathe. So we spoke about the young lady, Miss Thomas. Next up is another young lady of her day, Mary Bowser. Now, this is Women's History Month, and this is a woman of color. And I see Sergio is out there. Sergio, our friend, and also we got to get him for next week for his entertainment Shaolin Act update. This young woman's, historical woman's adventure, why this has not been made into a movie is criminal. Mary Elizabeth Bowser, born somewhere around 1839, 1840, she was a slave briefly. Somehow, at some point, her master died, and what was somewhat, you know, it wasn't always that common, but on occasion, if a master would die, sometimes they would put it in a will, they would have some kind of way to free their slaves. So this is one of the things where she was very young, and she was free. So she's a free woman in the early 1800s or mid 1800s. Anyway, what's cool with her, and why her story should be made into a movie. And I picked up a book, by the way, A Black Spy in the Confederate White House. Well, that's one book actually. It's a new book. I think it's called The Life of Mary Bowser. I'll tell you before the end of the broadcast, folks. I did download it on my phone. Anyway, here we have a woman that was formerly a slave, freed by her family, by her owner family. And what was custom in those days, when these slaves were freed, oftentimes they would end up working with the family again. They would still be there, but they were not formally slaves, but they would just end up just working at their former master's abode. That's all they knew. Anyway, they took a liking to Ms. Bowser because she showed exceptional intelligence. What has been reported is that she had a photographic memory. She literally had an eidetic memory. So what ends up happening at some point is she becomes a Union spy. During the Civil War, she becomes a spy for the Union Army against the Confederates, and she ends up working in the Confederate White House under Jefferson Davis, who was the Confederate president. Now, what's interesting about this story and why it should get the cinematic effort is that, okay, you have a free woman who has an eidetic memory, a black woman's eidetic memory, who plays dumb. She plays of a lesser intelligence. At some point, her former masters allowed her to become educated. So she's actually very well educated at some point. And she ends up working for the Confederates as a spy, however, you know, for the Union. But she worked for the Confederate in the Confederate White House. And because she was a slave, what was very common at that time is they took black folks as being, you know, innocuous and being almost invisible. So plans were planned. Yes, well, I'm being, you know.
Yes, okay.
But they had plans hanging around, you know, written plans. They would speak very candidly in front of slaves, thinking that they were not sophisticated enough to understand what was being said. But she was extremely sophisticated enough to understand what was being said. So she would report what was said around her to the Union armies. And on top of that, because she had an eidetic memory, she could memorize certain documents verbatim. Verbatim. So this woman's story is incredible. And the fact that she had access to top secret information, that she had this eidetic memory, why wouldn't we see this? I mean, this is something that I wouldn't want to see Halle in this, because Halle Berry, because she's done everything. You know, let somebody else get in there. But why can't we see a movie about this? A different spin on slavery. A different spin on the Civil War. Heck, we've seen Lincoln, you know, everyone's getting accolades. Daniel Day Lewis, he gets his respect. But there's other stories to tell besides Lincoln during the Civil War era. So I think it's important for you folks to definitely do some research on Mary Bowser. There is a book that I was able to download. The Secrets of Mary Bowser, I believe, is the name of the book. The Secrets of Mary Bowser. And that's available at Amazon. I have it on my phone. I'm reading it even as we speak. But it's a compelling story. And why this hasn't gotten the cinematic treatment, I guess we know. We hear the good times, Captain.
Duh. Duh.
You have to laugh before you can cry, folks. Good Times, the movie, will probably be made before we see a Mary Bowser movie. As I grew up on the Good Times family, I mean, it was entertainment. Entertainment was Norman Lear. Norman Lear owned 70s television. No, yes. Owned 70s and 80s television was owned almost literally by this gentleman, by Norman Lear. But those are not those times. Today we're in some new time, but they're trying to bring us back to the old times. I don't know. We're going to go to a musical break in a moment, Captain, but, I mean, just quickly, what are your thoughts when we dig in this? What are your thoughts about this potential for a Good Times movie?
Well, look, as you just said, we're not in the 70s anymore. At that time, that was nice. It was entertaining. I really do not want to see a Good Times movie. I have no desire whatsoever to see that. None whatsoever. None. Now, Mary Bowser, that's a whole different story. Quentin, are you listening? Quentin, are you listening? Quentin Tarantino, by the way. Are you listening? Okay, that's all.
So no J.B. Smooth for you.
No.
No J.B. Smooth for you. I mean, we already know what the cast is going to be. You can guess the cast for this thing already. All right, listen, let's go to a quick group. I see our friend from Chi-Town is waiting in advance. Hold on, Serge. We'll get to you in one moment. Let's go to a quick groove, and then we'll discuss this. You know what? I can't do this anymore, Captain. I can't even talk about a Good Times movie. I just can't do it anymore. Farcical Negroes, Captain. The world we have to bring back, farcical Negroes. All right, folks. Anyway, this is Andy Allo, who's a lovely young thing. Andy Allo, under the auspices of her mentor, Prince. People Pleaser, People Pleaser by Andy Allo. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
Used to be a people pleaser. gonna take my time.
Game. That was Andy Allo, People Pleaser. Definitely, folks, pick up the Superconductor CD. Or do they still make CDs anymore? I guess it's probably available at iTunes. Definitely a great ride, great jam. She's under the tutelage of Prince for, I guess, most of this album. And I think, I definitely heard Trombone Shorty on that cut, but I think, speaking of Mr. Maceo Parker, because his style is pretty easy to detect. I think he also played on that jam as well. So if he comes on the 27th, we'll ask him about that. All right. Anyway, folks, we're talking about this Good Times movie. Let me bring in our friend of the show, Mr. Mims.
Yes, I am here.
Welcome,
I want to add two things. You were talking about the woman who was a Confederate spy.
Right.
Do you know the story of Eugene Ballard? Bullard, I should say. His name was Eugene Bullard.
I've heard.
Do you know
the name.
That story?
Not completely.
This is a guy. Talk about a move being made. This is a guy. He went to France and during World War I, he became the first black fighter pilot ever. He stayed in Paris, married a daughter of a French countess. Something he couldn't do in the States. He opened up a nightclub, and when World War II happened,
I did hear about this. Okay, this story
because,
is very fascinating.
Right, because he spoke fluent German, all these German officers would come to his club, and thinking, well, he's just a black guy, he doesn't know anything. He overheard everything that these guys were talking about, and he was a member of the French Resistance. It turned over tons of valuable information to them. He was seriously wounded. He had to go back to the United States. Unfortunately, maybe it was a mistake. He ended up his days working as an elevator operator.
Wow.
And even 2 years before he died, he was awarded the Legion of Honor by France.
Yeah, I remember
then,
reading something about his story. I did. Now,
right.
I remember.
And then you can do a movie. You can do a movie about Josephine Baker. You don't forget, she was the toast of France, the toast of Paris. When the Germans invaded France, they treated her as a celebrity. They didn't think she was dangerous at all. She traveled throughout Europe, even though she ran a huge spy operation for France, for French intelligence. She had she was based in the south of France. She opened up a theater, which really was a cover for a whole spy operation that she had. She trained spies. She smuggled people, refugees and people out of the country. And then later, she expanded the same operation to North Africa.
Well,
these are fascinating stories.
Well, I remember a couple of things. First of all, Bullard is buried not too far from where we're broadcasting. He's buried in Flushing Cemetery. But I remember the story now because I remember his face. I'm on Wikipedia now, and he has he looks like Wesley Snipes. Wesley Snipes looks like him. His photograph. I mean, literally, he looks like Wesley Snipes. But
Go to that. I'm trying to remember what he looks like. I'll take your word for it.
Go to Wikipedia. There's a picture of him as a corporal. It says his nickname was a Black Swallow of Death. But I remember his story because I remember his photograph. And he looks like, Wesley should be getting out this year.
No, he is out. He is out.
Oh, Wesley Snipes is out?
Oh yeah, he was at the Grammys.
What?
No one said anything about that.
Huh. I thought he was coming out like I think the spring of 2013.
No, I believe he's already out. And oh my God, you're right. He's a splitting image.
Well, hey, listen, that's the show. I mean, that's the movie right there. Actually, the way he was so heroic, as you just described him, it would be perfect for someone like Wesley to do, accurately.
Well, you know, we reported this on Shadow and Act, a movie, a Western horror film that Wesley Snipes made before he left, I mean, before he went to a prison, has just been bought by a distributor, just been picked up. I'm going to tell you something. I think he can restart a film career again. Don't forget, he didn't get in trouble for any sort of morals problem or any kind of crime. It was a tax thing.
Absolutely.
So therefore, there's no real, what's the word I'm looking for, hideous scandal or anything about him. He went to jail because it was a tax issue he had with the government. It wasn't because of any impropriety with a woman, or it wasn't because of a murder charge or a drug charge. It was that. So as far as a lot of people are concerned, he's still pretty clean.
Well, listen, what about, I forgot her name now. She's extremely wealthy. She did time for tax evasion.
Martha Stewart, same thing. Martha Stewart came bounce right back.
Yeah, her money was still correct. So now quickly, Serge, what's your take on this Good Times thing?
Well, you know, it just shows you that, number one, Hollywood is desperate. Hollywood is actually out of ideas. They're completely out of ideas. Completely out of ideas. They don't know what to do. Now, nobody knows anything. That's the old line. They're just grabbing at straws. Maybe this will work, they're thinking. And also, don't forget, they've announced this film. There's no guarantee they're going to make it. Most films that are announced are not made. You know, a lot of times what happened is that the studios will throw something out, an idea of thinking, let's make a movie of this, but let's test the public's reaction to it before we continue on. We posted this thing on Shadow and Act. It got a lot of responses, most of them negative. Gee, not surprising.
Why.
Yeah, sure, there were a few who said, you know, oh, I love to see it. I loved it as a kid or something like that. But most of it is it's negative. I don't think there's any real interest for this movie. I think people are just simply rolling their eyes. I will be very, very shocked if I'll be surprised if it actually gets made.
Well,
as
you know,
I
what,
said before.
Let me back up for a minute, because there's an assumption that the captain, well, maybe not the captain so much, but that I make, that when we talk about these things, we think folks know about them. We have a lot of young friends in our cipher that when the captain and I talk about things that could be 5 years ago, they don't know about it. Just to the audience, again, we're talking about Good Times, a Norman Lear property from the mid-70s, I think 1974 is when it actually came out. John Amos was the father. Esther Rolle was the mother. And it essentially told the story in a comedic way, but sometimes dramatic. Sometimes dramatic. I'm thinking of the Debbie Allen episode where she was a drug addict and she died. A story of a inner-city family living in the projects. But there was some dignity there. I mean, there was some dignity, a scotia of minstrelsy with J.J. As the kid Dynamite thing. But I don't know if you can remake that. I don't know. I think some things are what they were for that time period. The sensibilities have changed. There's talk now that this would be a period movie. But what approach would they take? Would it be comedic? Would it be, because that's one thing about Good Times. It might have been more of a dramedy at times. I mean, sometimes, you know, that infamous damn, damn, damn thing. I mean, sometimes it would get really, really sorrowful. But trying to repeat that for the silver screen, I don't know if it's going to translate well for the big screen.
First of all, and also keep in mind that the producer and the screenwriter who are attached to this project are both white.
Well, they were white before.
Yes, right.
That hasn't changed.
Right. You're absolutely right. What's the difference? You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And then
we have Tarantino as our official black, a white black filmmaker.
Right.
So, you know, come on.
Yeah, but you know, if I'm on the page right now. Right, I'm on the page.
Give you the Puffy remix there, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah,
sorry,
I mean, you know, I'm just looking at the comments. I'm on the page right now, the way we wrote about it. I mean, the comments. People are saying, like, the Hollywood studio system is dead. I hate the idea of someone trying to make it into a movie. Somebody says maybe they can get Zoe Saldana to save one of her turbans from the Nina Simone flick,
God.
Guess it's Florida. Why even bother? Why? You know, there's nothing here. There's no interest. I don't say there's no response. There's no. Everybody's like, oh, what the hell? Who cares?
Sir, let me tell you something, and this may have to go into another show. But for the last show, we interviewed John Schnepp. We missed him last week. He came through this week. John Schnepp is a producer-director from Cartoon Network, Metalocalypse, and The Venture Brothers. And now he's involved with this documentary about this failed Tim Burton Superman movie. And the reason why I mention him is because there are so many people who are getting film projects greenlit by going to Kickstarter. What's happening with black folks? I mean, Veronica Mars is probably going to see
right.
see the light of day simply because the fans want it. They got $3.5 million from a website from people who just want to see that. So you mean to tell me that black folks can't put their money together to get some of these things done for stuff that they want to see?
And then what happened was that Warner Brothers saw that and they jumped in. Warner Brothers said, okay, we're going to make it out. Because Warner Brothers saw, really, they got that much money that fast? People want to see a Veronica Mars movie? So Warner's made the deal to make a film. Now, there are many black filmmakers who use Kickstarter. We cover them all the time. All the time. We cover them. There are plenty of black filmmakers who also use Kickstarter to make movies. There are African producers. We just had a piece about an Ethiopian filmmaker who overshot his goal. He got so many donations. He overshot his goal. So, I mean, the thing about it is that there are people who do it. Now, Veronica of Mars was a movie that was a TV show, had a cult following. So, of course, more people are going to be interested in that. But filmmakers do it all the time. That's not unusual anymore.
Well, listen, Serge, I'm sure you're aware of this, and this is why it's so important for Shadow and Ath to succeed. I mean, it's succeeding even as we speak. But the implications for a Shadow and Ath are even larger than one would think, because now we do need some kind of hub, some kind of place where people know where to find these films and to get the word out, and perhaps Shadow and Ath will be that force for these kind of things, because it's one thing to get the money, it's another thing to get people to rally around looking at these films and getting it done. So maybe Shadow and Ath would have to be that place, that institution, dare I say, that will, you know, foist out these movies to say, hey, this is where you go. This is what's happening. That's part of the problem.
I mean, that's what we do. I mean, that's what we do.
That's why it's necessary.
We talk about these movies. We champion all kinds of movies, Hollywood films, independent films, black television, whatever it has anything to do with black content. We talk about it. We champion movies. A lot of movies that we think are really good that deserve an audience. I cannot tell you how many filmmakers have sent us emails thanking us, telling us, "You thank you so much for writing about us. I've gotten so much feedback. I've gotten so much report, so much support from people. People want to know about the picture." I mean, we do it all the time. We do interviews. I just finished doing an interview. I mean, I've written it. It'll be up in a few days with Anton Fuqua,
you know,
the director of Training Day and Shooter,
right.
And he has a new film, Olympus has Fallen.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
And actually, next week I'll be doing an interview with Chadwick Boseman. He's the young guy. Actually, he's not that young. Actually, he's in his late 30s, but he's the guy who plays Jackie Robinson in the movie 42,
right,
which is coming out next month. I'm doing an interview with him. What is happening, we are discovering Shadow and Ath, is now people are constantly coming to us. They're saying, look, please, could you interview us? Could you write about us? Because, look, Ebony's not doing it. Bossup's not doing it. Well, Bossup is gossip. I'm sure he's going to talk about Little Wayne. Is he or isn't he dying? Talk about that later.
Oh, unfortunately, he's going to live. But go ahead.
Yeah. All the websites are doing this. The Griot is not doing this. The Root is not doing this. We have this all by ourselves, which is why our readership keeps growing and growing and growing and getting bigger. And, you know, just this is, between you and me and all our listeners, we found out that someone at the Daily Beast basically ripped off one of our articles.
Wow.
I mean, almost verbatim. So, I mean, this is the second time it's happened, a major website. So we had to go to Daily Beast and said, hey, cut it out. If you either ask us and we will tell you about it, you know, don't have one of your writers rip us off.
Or give you credit.
You know? Right, or give us credit. I mean, look, when I talked to Halle Berry and when I she told me that, you know, it looks like she was going to do Storm again. I was the first person to get that.
Yeah,
I was
you
the first.
Broke it. You broke that story.
I broke that story that she was coming back, you know, and that went around the world. A lot of people credited us, saying, hey, look, Shadow and Ath confirms that Halle Berry is definitely coming back as Storm. You know, personally, I don't know. I don't care. All I know is that she is gorgeous.
I know.
I don't know what she. It went in one ear and went out another. I just said, good Lord.
Now,
this
let me
woman.
Ask you a couple of questions.
It's unbelievable.
I'm glad you went in that direction, because we're gonna talk about this tragedy in your area, because I want to have you on for a moment, because we got to talk about this craziness in Chicago.
You know about the baby? Yeah.
I can't even hardly say it, Sergio. But quickly, before we get into the tragedy, let's talk about the beauty. How is she holding up? Did she wear any open-toe shoes? Did she show any legs? That's what I want to know.
Well, no, she was wearing like a black pullover. It was somewhat cut down. Noticed the rings on her fingers. A pair of slacks. She's very thin. You know, she's not petite. She's about maybe 5'7", 5'8". She's got an incredible body. But, I mean, she is gorgeous. I mean, she's 46.
She still looks like Halle Berry.
She's 46. I met her 5 years ago, and she looks better today than when I met her 5 years ago. I mean, you know, there are very few people who are really gorgeous. I mean, if you meet them, I mean, and she wasn't wearing makeup. She really wasn't wearing that much makeup. And I'm not bragging. I'm really not bragging when I say this. I really don't mean it. But over the years, I've met a lot of famous people. And most of the times, you know, you'd be surprised how they look like in person. They're shorter. They're taller. They're thinner. A lot of times they're thinner. But she's one of the few people who looks exactly the way she looks on screen.
You met Kerry Washington too, right?
I have met Kerry Washington, right.
Yeah,
right.
Well, what does she look like?
Same thing.
Oh,
same
she's good too.
Thing. Gorgeous.
All right.
Same thing. You know, and I mean, and, no,
that's
you know
what?
What? This will surprise you. This will surprise you. The person who surprised me the most when I met them in person, this will surprise you, is Chris Rock.
Okay.
Because if you meet him in person, he's a really good-looking guy.
All right.
And a lot of people have said this,
I'm not
too.
Defending male looks, so go ahead.
No, but here's the point. He doesn't look that way in the movies. They don't know how to light him. You know, but if you meet him in person, you go like, wow, he's much better looking in person than he is on the screen. And a lot of people have said that too. So, I don't know. I mean, a Viola Davis is a really stunningly beautiful woman if you meet her in person.
I believe that. I believe that. They sort of
ugly her up, or they make her more plain. But if you meet her in person, and first of all, she must work out because she has a really muscular toned body on her. And
yeah,
I said, well, you don't see that in the movies.
Well, you know what, Serge? Unfortunately, I think with black folk, and sometimes we do this to ourselves, just regular people, there's a lot of potential with black people, which is what we talk about on the show, not to get into this long diatribe. But we do ourselves a disservice all the time. That's just the way we do, unfortunately. We don't kick it up. We refuse to kick it up.
Well, you know, you may have a point. I don't know. You know, you may have a point, but
trust me, I know. Yeah. We pull it back all the time.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, listen. Go ahead.
But you see, but
quickly,
that's the point. The point is that I think a lot of people. Well, okay, like Halle Berry, like going back to her, she like if you saw her on the Tonight Show when she's wearing this really low cut dress, she knows how to play it. She knows exactly how to play it. And I was reading something. She was on Conan's show the other day, you know, to promote The Call, which actually is doing pretty well at the box office. When I do
Thank
the box office report,
it
is a hit. It's a hit.
Okay.
And
God.
She said, no, I'm sorry, but when I read this, she was telling Conan, she said, you know, people don't put perfume, women don't put perfume on the right way. You know, they put it on their necks or they put it behind their ears. She said, with perfume, you're supposed to put it between your legs.
Ooh!
Because what happens is that people, you have this aura of the perfume around you, but when people come up and hug you, they don't get the smell on them. Well, that depends on where you test for. So anyway.
Sir, let's go to another topic because I almost lost the Afro Nerd branding when you just mentioned that. So
that's what I'm thinking.
I got to keep it PG.
Wow.
Once you mentioned Halle Berry and between her legs, I lost
right.
it for a minute. So let us reconvene. Let me calm down.
You see now that reminds me of a joke. I can say this on the. I can. It reminds me of this joke. A friend of mine told me this a long time ago. People who don't know me know that I'm bald. I started losing my hair when I was 17.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm bald. And somebody said, well, you know, there's a great advantage for being bald.
Well,
and I said, what's that? He said, you don't chafe the inside of the thighs.
Okay. You know what? I'm not going to touch that. Listen, sir, hold on for a second. Let's go.
How did we get into this? I forgot. How did this happen?
You mentioned Halle Berry, and I already got a certain thing in my head. Let's go to a quick groove, Serge. When we come back, we got to talk about this tragedy. You're close to this to the region, obviously. You're in Chicago. I don't know what the hell is going on. I'm hearing now that there's some kind of march now. There's a march centered around this little girl. We have a march over here for something. It's kind of crazy.
There's always a march.
Black folks are marching again. So,
It's easy to get a march. It's easy to get them. What are you going to do about it? It's easy to get a march. It's easy to get a march. But what are you going to do beyond that? After everybody goes home, then what happens after that?
Exactly. Listen, let's go to a quick groove. We get back. More Andy Allo, actually. This is, again, this is the Prince's Girl. If I Was a King. If I Was a King, we'll be back. Right back, folks. Let's groove. All right, folks, once again, if I was a king, Andy Allo, from the superconductor, I guess I should say download, you can barely say CD now, definitely a fetching young woman. And, you know, it's a shame, Captain and Sergio, that you see these women. There are attractive women that can keep their clothes on, that can really do it. And yet, if you take your clothes off and you speak in vulgar tones, that's where the money's at. And I don't know if that's that really breaks my heart that we live in a world that we do this consistently. That we can't. I see the woman I played last week, Mara Ruby, 22 years old. You see her in the video. She's wearing, you know, she's very very sophisticated for her age. She's wearing vintage clothing. She's driving a vintage Porsche. She's doing a cover of a Van Hunt song character. She looks beautiful. But the fact that she's, you know, she's not dropping it like it's hot and she's keeping her clothes on, that's not what sells. And there's something wrong in the world where you can't see a beautiful woman in a respectful way. Something is wrong. So that's me saying what I always say. But sometimes it gets me, I think. All right, quickly, something else that gets me, Serge, Captain. I could barely look at this story. I just can't deal with it. It's the story of a six-month-year-old girl that was killed, I think riddled with bullets, five bullets.
No, that's not accurate. That's not accurate. The baby is still dead. It was shot. The baby was shot by one bullet, but it ricocheted through her body. But it wasn't five, as the original story was reported. Basically, what happened was that the father was in the back. Well, he was in a car. I don't know if he was in the front seat or in the back seat. But he was in a car changing the baby's diaper. A van pulled up, shot at the father. He was hit a couple times. The baby was shot once. It died really a few hours later. No way a baby could survive. Now, one of the things you have to understand is that the mother of the baby was shot when she was pregnant. She was shot in the leg. I don't know the details about that. The father had an arrest record. He had been arrested 29 times prior, before this incident happened. Now, some people are saying that they were trying to change their lives. They were married. You know, this wasn't a baby mama situation. They were married. She was working a job, really in McDonald's, but she was working a job. But still, the fact of the matter is that a lot of people are saying that, you know, considering the parents' background, maybe the baby never had a chance in the first place. There still are some questions about exactly what happened. You know, why was the father in the car in the late at night, you know, changing the diaper? When he changed the diaper in the home, you know, was he waiting for somebody? Was there somebody else there we don't know about? Still, the end result is you have a six-month-old baby who was shot. As of yet, nobody has been arrested, or the police have not named anybody as a person of interest that they're looking for.
Now, question. Wasn't the father still a member of the GDs, Gangster Disciples?
Yeah, he was a member of a gang. I don't know if he still was. I don't know. He definitely had affiliations with a gang. Whether he was still in one or not, I can't tell. I don't know. I can tell you. As I said, the mother had been shot before in the leg, like when she was 5 months pregnant. The situation when that happened, I mean, was the circumstances around that situation? I don't know. Nobody's talking about that.
Well, Serge, I mean, listen, it's a tragedy, but, you know, when you get into it, I mean, what's happening is we're becoming dismissive of black death, and we have been. And I guess I'm surprised that we're actually hearing something of a march taking place, because there's a march and rioting that's taking place in New York because of a 16-year-old young man that was killed by the police. Allegedly, he was, you know, in some mischief with some other kids, and the police were investigating. He pointed a gun at them, and they fired. Now, the community is saying, and witnesses are saying, that's not exactly what happened, and, you know, but they found the gun, but they, you know, you don't know what to believe, but I know that what I'm hearing is people are rioting, Serge, in Brooklyn. They're accosting innocents. They're just going through businesses and beating up people in anger over this kid being killed. I mean, we're talking about chaos that has no rhyme or reason. Why can't a cop shoot a kid if the gun is being pointed at him? But then
the
gun wasn't pointing at him.
No, you see, but the thing about it is that the reason that people get upset is because it's an easy out to say, well, look, it's your fault. People don't want to look in the mirror and say, what are we doing to ourselves? You know, like here in Chicago, I'm sure there was a march. There's always a march. There's always a preacher. This is one preacher right now who's really making a name for himself. Brooks, I believe his name is. You know, being on the, you know, always being present every time there's a shooting or having a lot of drive-by funerals in his church. You know, you can always depend on Jesse Jackson to show up, not really say anything, but to show up in a, you know, at a protest or a march. Yeah, because people don't want to face the fact that this is us. We're doing this to ourselves. We are doing this to ourselves. And I still say it is the basic cause, the basic root to everything is self-hatred. That's it. It is pure self-hatred. And nobody wants to acknowledge that, or if they know that, they have no ideas. And you can say it's guilt. I talked to people. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and she was telling about, she's a teacher, she deals with teenagers, and she was telling me about these lies that these teenagers go through. And I said, well, what about their parents? And she tells me their parents are drug addicts, they have mental problems, they, you know, and it's like you have a whole, like, generation of parents who have dropped the ball.
Well, unfortunately, we got about seconds now. It gets good when we're about to close the shop. We'll table it, gentlemen. It's a culture of violence. These people are living in a culture of violence. When you have a pregnant woman that gets shot in the leg and it's business as usual, there's a problem. All right, listen, it's been real. We'll table it for next week. Let's go on out with Little Child by Joy. See you guys. It's been a pleasure.
All right.
Thank you.